Two things right off the bat. Don't forget to go check out the video of me eating the Ghostbusters gum older than Andrew. That is on our YouTube channel and the Facebook page. If you search Dissecting the 80s on YouTube, you should be able to find it. It's hilarious. It's so crunchy and loud. And we're also giving away Ghostbusters cards. All you have to do is email dissectingthe80s@gmail.com and let us know what your favorite episode is. That's it. I just want to know what people's favorite episode is. I'm curious. The other thing you could do, and if you do this, we're absolutely going to play it on the air, but we now have a phone number. We have a phone number now if you would like to call us, 856-D-I-S-S-E-C-T. So call us and leave us a message. And if you don't say, you know, hateful things, we might even let it play on the air.
You know, that's the same letters as call ATT. That, remember that old jingle? Dial down the middle. C-A-L-L-A-T-T. D-I-S-S-E-C-T.
Okay. I was like, wait, that's not straight down the middle. So, yeah. No. So, if you do call or email, you got to give us your address so I can mail you the cards. So, I promise not to do anything weird with your address, but that's what we got. Welcome to Dissecting the 80s. I am Trip Leno, one half of the Mega Podcasting Powers. And with me, as always, is my tag team partner, a man who probably understood most of the French in this movie, and as far as I'm aware, has never flipped a burger professionally, and, additionally, has stopped eating Wheat Thins long enough to record this podcast, the Macho Mandrew.
Andrew Leno. And they're Cheez-Its.
Oh, Cheez-Its, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Cheez-Its to my left and flatbread crisps to my right.
Well, you guys missed out on some really great Foley work. I'm sorry.
You know what? I'll do it at the end. It can be the stinger.
All right. Stay tuned after the credit sequence. I'd like you to join the Avengers Initiative. Crunch, crunch, crunch.
It'll be Guess the Chip. Guess the Chip.
Okay. After the show, you can play our new one-time-only game. Is Andrew eating a flatbread crisp or a Cheez-It? Winner gets a Ghostbusters card. This week, we're very sorry we didn't tell you what we were going to do for our episode here, but we are discussing 1985's John Cusack flick, Better Off Dead. So you know what that means.
We got to go back. We got to go dissect the 80s. It's your K-12. Something's got to be done about your K-12.
When the mega powers explode.
I'm talking about the 80s.
Great Scott.
Cream of the crop. Oh, yeah.
Mega powers, yeah!
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Also, I should say right here at the beginning, thank you so much to number one Dissectomaniac Mom for the awesome new headphones I'm using for this and future podcasts. Thank you very much. Great, great Christmas present. So, I also want to say right off the bat, I've right off the bat it like 9 times in this episode, so I apologize. I have a feeling some people are going to be turning this episode on and being like a little concerned because this episode is beloved by, or this movie is beloved, maybe this episode will be, but this movie is certainly beloved by like a lot of people. And I just want to tell
is
you
it really?
Right off the bat. Oh yeah, it's like a cult classic-y, definitely. So I just want to say to those folks, you're in a safe space. I feel that way too. I don't know how Andrew feels, but like at worst, you're getting one hater and one lover on this podcast. So just, it's gonna be okay. I'm fully in the bag for this movie in a way I didn't know I was until I rewatched it. So, let's start with the goofy, crazy animated credit sequence.
I mean, I'm not sure what else there's to say about it beyond it's there.
I like it's kind of like reminds me of what would be on like an Adult Swim these days.
Yeah, that's true. I can see that.
Like, it's kind of rough around the edges and kind of
Bob's Burgers
dirty looking. Yeah, a little bit, but also, like, dirty in a way. Like, the lines are kind of shaky and not clean and whatnot. It's interesting. It's kind of hard to describe images with words, I suppose. But, yeah, I really do dig it. And then we cut into Cusack's bedroom, which is just covered in photos of his girlfriend, like basically wallpapered with photos of this woman.
Well, I also at this moment was like, oh, John Cusack's in this movie. It's the 80s. I think that means Joan Cusack shows up. Because I thought that was like the rule in the 80s. Was it like they did cameos in each other's movies?
I wonder how true that is. I don't know that she's been in like the majority of. Is she in like Say Anything?
I don't know. I just know there's a couple, and like when I was younger, they were the couple that I had seen. So I was just like, oh, they're in all their movies.
Oh, okay. I mean, it makes sense if you're gonna be doing, you know, work in this industry. It's a nepotistic industry.
Yeah, and it's not like they ever did crazy things. It was like, you're gonna have this one line and wear headgear.
Yeah, that's true. So this movie is directed by Savage Steve Holland, who directed another movie called One Crazy Summer that I also quite enjoy, and then like went on to become a Nickelodeon guru, like making a lot of children's television.
Really?
Yeah. He animated The Whammy on Press Your Luck. Eek the Cat was his on Fox Kids. I don't know if you remember that.
I vaguely do. Was he Bobby? Bobby's World?
I don't think so. He also wrote Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, like the show.
Oh, I forgot there was a show.
He did a couple episodes of Kenan and Kel, a couple episodes of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV show, a couple things with animated
Sabrina. I forgot that they just turned every successful family movie into a kids show at one point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're going to get into that at some point, because a few of them are in the 80s, but that's definitely was a 90s thing of like, and even like some movies nowhere near aimed at children got animated spinoffs.
I know there's Beetlejuice.
Yeah, stuff like that, where it's like, why is this for children? He also was involved with your favorite, Lizzie McGuire.
I love Lizzie McGuire.
Directed 9 episodes of that. So
he's nervous to go back and watch, because I'm sure it doesn't hold up at all.
Well, of course not. I can tell you, as someone who was old enough to know it wasn't holding up while you were watching it, that it doesn't really hold up, but it's okay. You can nostalgically watch it like everybody watches nostalgic crap. So he made this movie and One Crazy Summer, both of which are like kind of delightfully weird in a way that I really like. But the thing that struck me most watching this is, have you watched any of Man Seeking Woman on FX or FXX, whatever channel they've shuffled it off to?
No.
It uses the same technique as this, which is using hyper absurdism to illustrate the actual absurdism of situations in life. And it's a thing that I didn't realize how much I loved until really digging into that show and digging into the book that he wrote as well. And like, it's a thing that pops up in a lot of weird, arty French films.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's been a common, you know, French film technique for decades. But I didn't realize how much I loved it until watching this, because it really,
I wish you had told me it was a thing.
I honestly forgot about it, because this is, and I'm sorry for we're rambling so much. I watched this movie a lot when I was a teenager, because it was on Comedy Central like almost daily.
Weird.
Yeah. So I've probably seen this movie 20 or 25 times, like a ridiculous number of times, at least portions of it. And I remembered like wildly large chunks of it, but it's funny, like I forgot about the hyper absurdism thing, because I think I remembered those bits, but not as much of the stuff that like that sets the baseline that makes it absurd. So I forgot the context, which makes the things less absurd, if that makes sense.
Yeah. See, it reminded me so it didn't, because the first like half of the movie I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I'm so confused. And then okay. I was like, oh shit, it's like Heathers.
Yeah.
It's not everything you're seeing is real. And it's, but it is an extension of the reality.
Yes.
And I want to rewatch it and like knowing that, because I feel like I would have enjoyed it more than I did.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't enjoy it, but I was just like, this is fucking weird. Like, I don't like that. This is weird. And then I was like, oh, no. It's Heather's. Heather's vision.
So to illustrate that, we wake up in Cusack's bedroom and there's all these pictures of his girlfriend on the wall. And then he goes to get in the shower and he takes off his shirt and his pants. We don't see anything other than his feet. And then he steps into the shower in his socks.
Well, okay. So the camera showed his feet, and then it showed him kicking the bath mat into like a trippable bump.
Yes.
And I was like, oh shit, he's going to die. I thought we were going to get like a ghost ski movie.
Oh, man. I would watch the hell out of a ghost ski movie.
Well, especially because later they're like, oh, he doesn't die. I was like, oh, you know what? That's going to come back later. That's going to be like Chekhov's rug bump. And then he's gonna die, and he's going to have to possess Booger to ski.
You turned this movie into, shit, what's it called?
Ghost Dad?
No, not Ghost Dad. Oh, man, that book they made us read it in high school.
Oh, are you talking about the Lovely Bones?
Yes. just made it the skiing variant of the Lovely Bones.
Well, okay, she possessed her sister to have sex with her boyfriend under a boat. I'm and saying
so you want Booger to ski the K-12. Booger yeah. is the sister, and the K-12 is the boyfriend.
And the skis are the sex.
Yes, exactly. It's basically the same movie.
But that's I was like, why can't that be the movie? And then for a good 10 minutes, I was like, I wish that was the movie.
Somebody call Vox. I'm writing a 10,000-word think piece on this comparison.
And the radio sounded like Jim.
Yes, it really did. It really did. So we get the first of our several running gags in the movie. The dad's asleep and he hears the paperboy's wheels with playing or the baseball cards in them, the noise, and he hears them and he runs downstairs to protect his garage because the paperboy has thrown the paper through the glass window like 4 consecutive times. And he like is struggling to get the garage door to open, and it's this like great jiggly moment, and he just gets it, and the paper hits the door instead of the window, and he celebrates, and then the door shuts so hard that all of the glass that's remaining shatters, and I instantly was like, oh, I'm gonna love watching this again.
If I had known the tone of the movie, I would have been asked, like, why doesn't he just stand in front of the single remaining pane of glass?
Yes, yes.
Like, just put yourself in front of it.
Just catch it, or put your hand there and just knock it down.
Anything.
Yes.
Tape cardboard? Like, I don't care.
Get a snow shovel and whack it down, like play goalie. But yeah, so that is an interesting point, because I'm sure you were like most audience members at the time that you're thinking like, oh, it's a cutesy John Cusack movie. Especially because we watched the trailer, we were waffling between a couple movies for this week, and the trailer doesn't really convey like this is an absurdist piece.
Oh no, not at all. I thought I was getting a like boy loses. First I thought it was going to be a ghost movie because it was called Better Off Dead.
Yeah.
And the trailer, the poster is like him sitting on a bridge, like clearly going to jump off. So I was like, oh, it's a ghost kid movie. And then I was like, I guess it's like a ski movie. Then he has to like win his girlfriend back through a ski competition. And it was this whole other layer of like, no, this is actually super absurdist and hyper aware of itself in a black comedy.
Right, right. So we go inside and we get another running gag of the mom cooking very weird stuff. And she serves the dad like a pile of blue greenish glop, basically.
Glop is a good word.
Yeah. And when he asks what it is, she's like, well, you said you didn't like all the grease with fried bacon, so I boiled it.
In what? In lie?
Yes, I think she might have. Or at least in some food coloring, because it looks like...
banana pudding.
Ew, what banana pudding are you eating that's green?
I just mean like the chunky texture.
Oh.
It looks like she dyed banana pudding. This.
Bananas are sort of like a pale yellow color. I don't know what you're eating, but it might be the banana peels.
Ew.
It reminded me of that like candy bacon strips.
Oh, yeah. The gummy candy?
Yeah. That's what it looked like.
I also thought the mom looked like she could have played Martha Plimpton's mom in the Goonies.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. They do have the same sort of haircut and big glasses move.
Yeah, I was like, that definitely is what that mom looks like. Like, she, it would at the end when they're reuniting with their family. I don't think we see Martha Plimpton's family.
I think it's just her dad.
Is it? I couldn't remember. Yeah. But I was like, I can see her waiting on the beach for her.
So we did the Goonies thing, and in the research for that, I found out that the sheriff is her dad.
What?
Yeah, and I don't think that's actually in the movie, but that's like an accepted fact on the internet.
Huh.
So that's in our episode. If you guys go back, we did the fake radio lab for Goonies. That fact is in there because I read it like all over the place on the internet and just accepted it to be true. And even if it wasn't, it was a fake radio play anyway. So it wasn't like we're going to get, you know, the fact check police on us. But yeah, so I think that's true. I don't know if it is, but I believe that it is. And then the other great gag.
Her fan
table,
club, Plimps Pimps, is going to just come after us.
the Plimp Pimps. bring it on. We welcome the challenge.
The Goodyear Plimps, if you will.
I think that would be it.
The Goodyear Plimps. Plimps.
Yeah. The real plimp heads out there are just like, they're shaking their fists. The other great gag that I like for the breakfast table is that the brother has cut out all of the UPC codes for the boxes of cereal. And for some reason in this
no
movie,
bags.
No bags. So every box that gets taken out of the cabinet is just dumping shit on the floor. And I don't like that just had like I knew it was coming, but they did like a great rule of three where it was like they picked up the one on the table, then he picked up one in the cabinet, and then he picked up another one in the cabinet, and that one dumped like even more. And it
yeah,
just
it was
like
great.
It just it perfectly timed, just slayed me.
And then we see his closet where all of the hangers have a picture of his girlfriend on them.
Yes, which is right after a line where the dad's like, I'm pretty sure he's obsessed. And she's like, he's not obsessed. Smash cut to the creepiest closet in history.
Horrifying.
Also, that closet is as big as like most people's one-bedroom apartments in New York City.
It is, but also nothing's real, remember?
Yes, no, I know. But I like that, like, his closet, you could walk from end to end it and probably cover, you know, most of your 10,000 steps for the day in two or three laps.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're introduced to the foreign exchange student who we just hung out with on our episode last week.
We did.
2 weeks ago, rather.
She had sex with her brother and was, like, really okay with it.
Yeah, it was probably not her finest moment. You might also know her as one of the princesses in Bill and Ted.
Oh. See, I'm she's a very solid actress and very pretty, and I'm surprised she didn't work more. Or was more well-known, I should say.
Yeah, didn't do a ton of stuff, that's for sure. And we're introduced to her as, like, essentially the property of this creepy guy, Ricky.
Fat shaming.
Yeah, yeah. But I will say, there are not that many jokes where it's like, boy, isn't he so fat. There's the one lunch table scene where he has, like, a lot of lunch, but that's mostly because he keeps offering her weirder and weirder things off the tray.
Okay.
But the other times when he eats lunch, it's not just like, oh, here's 48 pounds of food for Tubby McGee.
That's true. It was more nerd shaming, but they still put him in clothes that were three sizes too small.
Yeah, no, he looks like a doofus, but I think it's more doofus shaming than anything else.
Buttons hanging on for dear life.
And the other thing that I liked, which is so rare for the stuff that we watch, Ricky and his mom are like real terrible towards Monique, the French exchange student who Ricky's mom is basically like bought for sexual slavery purposes in this.
Yeah.
And they're very clearly painted as the villains, and they get their comeuppance. And it's just, well, sort of. And it's really awesome to have the people who are shitty get treated like villains for once.
Yeah,
once
it was
ever.
Nice. It was nice. And not just because everyone dies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then we get my first question of, like, is this a dream sequence? When he pulls up next to the two Asian guys driving, and they have, like, the stadium-style four-angle speaker on top of their car.
Uh-huh.
And one of the megaphone-handled microphone things. And he talks like he's on a sports center.
Howard Cosell.
Thank you.
Yeah. A Cinderella story. The once proud Lane, whatever his last name is.
Bryant.
Now a clothing maven.
No one knows Lane Bryant is actually a boy.
That's the big secret. He conned many, many women.
Move over, Victoria. Lane's got a secret now.
And it's John Cusack, like, smiling coquettishly. He's got his finger over his lips, like, peeking over his shoulder.
Yeah, that's it. Wearing an oversized
movie too.
Wearing an oversized, like, with like an oversized boxy blazer. He has holding my one finger over his shoulder. Hi, boys.
Be your best you at Lane Bryant.
Are we just writing better movies?
I think, I don't know about better, but we're certainly writing an interesting movie where the ghost of Lane Bryant has to ski the mountain in Booger's body. I'm sorry, Curtis Armstrong, the man has a name.
He does, but it's Booger.
It'll always be Booger to me, buddy. So actually, interesting anecdote. I did a little bit of research on this movie, and for years, Cusack hated this, and when people would ask him to sign stuff, would just flat out refuse to, and apparently, like, two or three years ago, he finally came around, and it was an interview with Curtis Armstrong, where he was like, yeah, I heard that Cusack signed a Better Off Dead poster for somebody, which is awesome, because I've always loved the movie, and it's awesome to hear he came around, and then in one of the Hot Tub Time Machine movies, they have somebody behind Cusack yell out like $2, which is another reference to this. So he must have come around a bit on it.
Wait, is John Cusack like a lead character in the Hot Tub Time Machine movies?
In the first one.
Oh.
I don't think he came back for the second one, but he's one of the leads in the first movie. He even dresses like Lloyd Dobler.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Like the coat and the whole deal. So he's about to race these guys. Boy, we're tangented all over this place. This is a tangent podcast. And he apparently has like some history with them that we've not seen, obviously. But they race each other, and
he puts on kitchen gloves.
Yes, I love that little bit. Are they fingerless in the first scene, or are they just fingerless later?
I think they're just fingerless later. Okay. I think they're regular yellow kitchen gloves, like rubber kitchen gloves.
Yeah, like dish scrubbers. And so they do like a 3-2-1 go at the stoplight, but his car's in reverse, so he just smashes into this guy's truck.
Who he works for?
Later.
Oh, late. I was like, this is weird. I wasn't sure if he worked for him the whole time or what the dealio was.
Yeah, so he backs straight into this guy who gets out of the car and like tries to pull him out of the car to beat him up, which is just like flat out amazing. He's got this cigar going and he's just this, like, blustery asshole.
He like scrambles over to the passenger seat of his car.
Yeah, because it's a bench seat, and you can do that. There's another scene later where he gets in from the passenger side and just, like, slides over to drive.
Yeah, I was like, what is he doing, you weirdo? Oh, right, old car.
Bench seat, baby. Bench seat.
And then we meet his girlfriend, or she's on the phone being like, oh, I'm going to dump that idiot.
Yeah, which is, like, super sad and terrible, but she's like, I guess she needs him for a ride to get up to the ski competition? Cause
I don't even know.
The tryouts, rather. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, probably. And then she pulls his photo out of the photo frame and puts in the new guy.
Who she hasn't even, like, had a conversation with.
No.
And throws Cusack in the trash, literally.
And then Booger's there wearing a top hat like he's Dickensian.
He's got a whole Dickensian outfit. He looks like he's about to go slaughter hookers in Whitechapel. Like,
I thought he was just late for the production of fucking Christmas Carol.
He literally looks like the drawings of the Jack the Ripper that you see. It's like literally the same coat and top hat. It's weird.
Oh, I pictured Scrooge or Marley.
Yeah, that would work. Yeah. And another detail I like about this scene is like they have a lot of presumably fake snow coming down on the actors, and about half of them, including Cusack, aren't wearing hats, and Cusack looks soaked and miserable.
Oh yeah, I was like, why aren't you wearing a hat, buddy? Isn't it cold? You have snow on your face.
Yeah, and so he's like, his cheeks are red, his nose is red, because, I mean, they're on an actual mountain, it looks like, but his jacket looks wet, and his hair is definitely wet. Like, he looks miserable in this scene, and I couldn't stop noticing that how terrible he looked. And I don't think it was on purpose, I think this is just one of those, like, weird little details. And then we're introduced to the villain of the movie, who's like your classic 80s high school movie villain, which is just, you know...
Perfectly coiffed blonde hair.
Yep, super douchey. Very rich.
He's got the, he almost talks like James Bottomtooth from Family Guy.
Yeah.
Like, very close.
Yeah. And he's like, clearly, like, a super rich douche nozzle.
But he's also super good. He's like the Cobra Kai kid, where he's also super good at the thing.
Yeah, yeah. He's very, very talented. So the gist is they have to ski this run in a certain time to be qualifying. And so Cusack's at the top, and Curtis Armstrong does a perfect Mickey from Rocky.
Oh, I loved it.
He's got a cigarette in the corner of his mouth, like, you got this, champ! You're gonna eat lightning and crap thunder!
He even calls him Rock.
Yeah, yeah, he's rubbing his shoulders, and he's just, like, you know, slapping him on the back a little bit, like, trying to rile him up.
Also, and then ski runs look like, they just look like Broken Leg City to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I would die so horribly. Have you ever skied?
No, never. I want to. Okay. It's on my list.
So I used to do it back in high school.
Ski club?
I was in the ski club, yes, because it was, like, really cheap because it was group rates. We used to go, like, on a Friday night, it would be, like, $40.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, dude, you can't even rent skis for $40 now. It's crazy how much more expensive it's gotten since then. Because I have friends who are like, come ski with us. And I'm like, it's $180. No, thank you. I haven't done it in 15 or 12 years. I would die. I will tell one quick ski story here. So I was with some friends who were much better ability than I was. And this is at a ski place in Pennsylvania that I think it was Blue Mountain. I don't really remember. But the way it was structured was that the central run of the mountain had the ski lift on it, and then all of the routes like kind of dumped into this central one to slow down and take you to the bottom. But if you were going too fast, there's a bunch of like 8-foot square cement pillars in the middle of this ski run. And so I went to the top with my friends, and they all went to the Black Diamond or the Double Black Diamond or whatever the hell, probably just a Black Diamond. And I was like, well, I'll do this blue square, which is like 50% easier. And so I was like, you know, making my way down the thing by myself. And somehow I missed an interchange, and I was like, boy, this is like a lot harder all of a sudden, because there was like these like bumpy, like I've learned later that they were basically moguls, which is the thing they're doing here where they're going like left, right, left, right. But I was just going like bump, 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 bump over top of them because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And because like I was at the level where I was like pizza to stop, French fries to go, and turn left and right to slow yourself down. And so I'm desperately trying to pizza over moguls with like my skis are flap, flap, flapping, like bouncing off the thing, and they're like crossing over on each other and like click, 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 click. And I'm like desperately out of control. And it comes around a really sharp turn that I have to like really throw my whole body weight in to make, and I come off and I'm heading directly for an 8-foot square cement pillar at like, I don't know how fast I was actually moving, but it felt like 25 miles an hour. And I was like, I can't possibly avoid that thing. Like I kept trying to turn and couldn't get my butt there. I kept, you know, I'm leaning. And I was finally like, I just have to fall like really hard. And so I just went down on my side and like smashed my ribs into the icy snow. And then I was going so fast still that the bottoms of my feet, like I hit the cement pillar with my skis, like perfectly flush in the bottom, banged off it with my feet. It unclipped the skis from the boots. They go down the mountain, and I lay there like you know, radiating, you know, the impact radiating up my legs into my knees and my hips and, you know, into my back. And I'm just like, ugh. And I lay down in the snow, and I'm like kind of in the fetal position. And I hear these voices like right behind me like, holy shit, is that guy okay? Did you see what happened? Oh my God. And the voices are getting closer and closer. And then I like they're clearly right on top of me. And then I hear trip. And it turns out all of my friends who went down the Black Diamond intentionally watched this like out of control guy and were like, boy, that looks like Tripp's jacket. That wouldn't be him, though. He went on the blue. Except, oh no, it was totally Tripp. And Tripp all of just his
Goldberged
gear.
Himself.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how to ski.
So my gear was just like all over the run, and like they had to go, like one of them had to go down and get my skis and like carefully climb them up to me. It was just a mess. Luckily, I didn't break anything because I would have had to buy it, but.
Yeah,
that was my. Or that was my.
Break anything in yourself.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that. Yeah, I immediately went to the money, which I guess
I was like, yeah, you didn't break anything. That's good. Buy. What are you buying? Oh, physical items.
Yeah. So that was, I think, the last time I ever skied. I think that was that day.
I want to. I have friends who were like, hey, they've looked in. Like my best friend Charlotte has looked into like, hey, let's get a couple couples together and we'll all spend like $75 on a ski lodge thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've never done it. I want to. It's something like, it seems like I should try it.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. I like most winter sports, though, so.
Yeah. See, I also like water ski. Like, I don't know if I've ever been successful in water skiing, but like all those like water-based balancing sports, I like.
Yeah, it's less of the balance thing and more like core strength.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Anyway, so Lane is getting dumped by, what's the girlfriend's name?
Beth.
Okay, Lane is getting dumped by Beth in the car, and it's basically just her audio over top of him looking very sad, where she's like, I mean, he's more popular, he's better looking, and he has a nicer car.
As if, like, I think it's important for me to be with someone who's more popular, is what she said.
Yeah, yeah, like, this is high school, this is very important, which I love, because, like, that's absolutely true, and it's also the worst thing I've ever heard.
I loved how this movie was like, oh, this is what high school was. Like, this is what like it felt like.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I love about this is it uses this like hyper absurdism to illustrate how shitty high school is for everybody, because high school is the worst. Even if you had like a good high school experience, it's like your body's all fucking weird and nobody knows how to talk to each other, and it's just like a constant cacophony of nonsense.
I hated middle school more than I hated high school.
I would agree with that. But I just think most people's high school experience is ridiculous. Like, either negative or positive, in total, like, it's a bunch of people who really don't know how to talk to each other yet. Like, your brain is not fully done doing all the bits it needs to do.
And it's a couple more minutes in the oven.
Yeah, and you're being asked to essentially be an adult, but you are nowhere near ready to do that, and so it causes a lot of drama. So we get another scene with the Howard Cosell car that again ends with a smashing into the Pig Burger guy's car, because this time it's in forward, because Cusack doesn't think to look at the car ahead of him before he starts racing.
Right? Like, come on, man.
This one feels like it's on him.
Oh, 100% this is on him.
And then we get, he comes home and his mom's vacuuming and she's like, how was skiing? And he says, Beth broke up with me. And she goes, oh, that's nice. And just keeps vacuuming the carpet.
Like she can't hear him, I guess.
Or she's just totally oblivious. She's not really paying attention.
That's true.
And this leads to the first of several hilarious suicide attempts where Cusack is in the garage making a noose out of a bunch of power cords.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom kicks the door. He's like, wait. He's like, wait, I've never even been in New York City. What am I doing here? And at that moment, she hits the door open and he's suddenly swinging by his neck and like desperately kicking his feet. And like, it's really dark comedy, but it's really funny to me. Like, it's just really well done.
That also happened in a zombie movie where he actually dies. The mom kills the son by mistake.
In a what movie?
A zombie movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's called Boy Eats Girl or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I'm not familiar with that at all.
I thought we watched it together.
Oh. Oh, I have no recollection of that.
Hang on.
I'm guessing it was a reference to this then?
It had to be. It was a 2005 horror comedy film.
Yeah, I don't recall that, but he survives, don't worry. Only to go down to dinner with his family where mom is serving, like, alien snot, I think? Like, it actually looks like the goopy green
it looks like gack.
From Alien. Yeah,
it looks
yeah,
like gack.
When the alien stretches out its little mouth and it has that, like, goopy stuff coming off.
Oh, yeah, little tiny mouth.
Yeah, yeah. The alien in Alien I'm referencing there. And she goes, I found this recipe in Women's Home Journal, but it got wet in the mailbox, so I just made up all the ingredients I didn't know. And I added raisins. You guys like raisins, right? And then the dinner literally, like, slither crawls off the plate.
Oh, amazing. I loved that it crawled away. It was perfect.
Is this where about the turn happened for you? Like, cause this is where it really gets absurd.
Yeah. I don't remember. Hang on. I wrote, oh, it's Heather's later, but it had clicked before then.
Okay.
It was around here and the paper boy.
Yeah.
I think, oh no, Subway Ghost. The teacher scene is when
okay.
I realized what
okay.
it was.
Okay. We're not too far from there, but so, he has to be excused from the table and he goes up to see his little brother. And the little brother, does he ever speak? He certainly hasn't spoken by this point in the movie.
I don't think he talks.
Okay. I always want, so this is a weird aside.
Royalties?
Do they not get residuals then?
I don't know. I know typically it's per line, but it might hit the contract, that might be negotiated in the contract. Like, I don't have lines, but I get X.
Yeah. Because, like, he's, like, in a bunch of scenes in this movie. It's not like he's a throwaway part.
Yeah. Well, also, like, Marlon Wayans gets residuals every time they play the movie Batman Forever, and he wasn't even in the movie.
What? Why?
He was supposed to play Robin.
And he gets paid when they air the movie?
Yes.
That's the craziest contract I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Because it was an overhaul when they kicked Tim Burton out. Tim Burton won Marlon.
That's bananas, though. Yeah. He didn't even like make.
I'm like 90% sure that is a fact.
Right on. Okay. But he has built an actual laser gun. Like, he turns around with this toy and he shoots it towards his brother and it burns a hole in the box that it came in.
Oh, it's
amazing.
Great.
Amazing. Yeah. I love the running subplot with the little brother where his life is just significantly better than Lane's at every turn.
Oh, it's amazing. It's a lovely, lovely movie. I mean, it's a lovely, lovely plot point of, like, it feels like the adult version of Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it. Like, we just continually get to check out on what Calvin's got going on, and
yeah.
It's always ridiculous. Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's a really good way to put it.
How to Meet Skeezy Women, I think the one was called.
Yeah, yeah. And here's where we get our first actual dream sequence of the movie, which I, like, this is, like, the best my brain has been encapsulated in a film in history. It's Lane meets Beth, and they're, like, throwing a football in a park with Booger. And I'm sorry, I'm going to keep calling him Booger. I know his name is Curtis Armstrong. Yeah. I've been trying to be better about that, but he's always going to be Booger to me. So they're like throwing a football and he spies these two cute girls. So him and Booger go over to talk to them and they're having like a, how do you like this area kind of conversation. But it immediately becomes just their internal monologues fighting. And he's like, oh no, she touched her nose. Does that mean I have something hanging on my nose? Let me make sure. And he's like wiping his nose off. And then it cuts to her side and she's like, oh my God, he keeps touching his nose. Does that mean I have something hanging out of my nose? And it keeps escalating where they're like touching their nose until finally he's like digging a towel in his ear and like trying to pick his teeth with a thumbnail.
It looks like they're like first base coach. No, they're like, is it first base coach? Is that what they do?
Or third base coach.
Third base coach. Yeah. It looks like the third base coaches where they're trying to communicate without words.
They're doing just like 19 it, tap signals.
Yeah, exactly.
But it just keeps escalating in a way where it's like, wait, am I subconsciously missing a signal? Oh wait, am I subconsciously missing a signal? And I just love that, like, it just escalates in a perfectly satisfying way to me.
And I wrote, is that how they met or something? I'm confused.
Yeah, that's supposed to be their meet cute.
Oh
yeah, they like, yeah, he ruined some picnics and then they, you know, scratched each other's noses or their respective noses for like 9 minutes.
And then we meet the paper boy, and I said, I'm going to hate this paper boy.
Oh, no. I say every time someone says $2, I respond by going, $2! Like, for literally my whole life.
Oh, no. He was the worst.
It's not a situation that arises often. Because
I was going to say, how often are people saying $2? Like, are you, like,
not $2, often.
$2 taco night?
Not like, often. I don't get to use it a lot because nothing costs that little anymore. But I will say that when I get the chance, I really enjoy it, and no one ever knows what I'm talking about.
No, they don't.
The one saving grace to the $2 kid, though, is that he saves Lane from eating cat food because he feeds the cat and then pours it into a bowl for himself and adds milk.
Yeah, it's gross, dude. It's gross.
And then what might be my favorite gag in the whole movie, and this is one that would absolutely be on Man Seeking Woman, he gets in the car, and it's he's flipping through the radio, and it's She's Gone by Hall & Oates. Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, like the old Motown-y song. 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon. And then it smash cuts to the radio, like being thrown out the window and skittering on the ground and breaking.
Yeah, I just really love that.
The like click, nope, click, nope, click, nope, whatever, cloof out the window. That might be my favorite gag in the whole movie, because that's just a perfect illustration of how you feel when you've been dumped. Like, everything is miserable and nothing helps for that first little bit. It's the everyone knows how that feels. It's the worst, and it's just like a perfect encapsulation of that to me.
Yeah.
Here is where we meet the ghost subway ghost. You want to do that?
Yeah, he's in class, and I was like, oh, it's a subway ghost, who is a more pronounced actor than I give him credit for, but I just know him as the subway ghost. I think it's Vincent Schiavelli, something like that.
Yeah, we talked about a little bit on our Ghost episode. He has like a really he was a really prolific character actor.
This is the moment where it started to turn for me, and I started to realize it was like not, it was absurdist.
Yeah,
because he's teaching geometry or whatever, or algebra or something. I don't know what
he's actually teaching.
It was a math.
Gibberish. Okay,
it was a math, and he's telling it as though it's like a comedic monologue and the class is laughing like he's the funniest thing they've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I just was continually confused.
Oh, see, yeah, I get how that would be confusing, but like now seeing it for the absurdist delight, like it's such a good illustration of when you're confused that like everyone in class understands shit and you don't get it. Like that's so what it feels like.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah. I got it towards the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once their hair stood up on end, I was like, oh, okay, hang on. We got a thing going.
Yeah. So he asks everybody to take out their homework, and everyone pulls out, like, one guy has, like, an accordion file. Someone else flips open, like, a desk, like, a computer that takes up, like,
a printer.
Desks. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's the printer with the little, like, the tearaways on the side.
The dot matrix.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he pulls out a piece of paper with gum in the middle of it that says, one, do homework. And nothing else.
And then the teacher's like, let me call everyone up to the people up to the board to do the homework for us all. And of course he picks him and a bunch of other students. So he's next to Beth trying to understand homework.
Yeah. And writing with a
protractor.
A protractor, yes. So he squeaks the chalk, and we get that thing you just talked about, everybody's hair standing on up. But then, like, he keeps writing, and the board gets, like, 30 feet tall, like the beginning of the Haunted Mansion in Disney World.
Yeah. Then we flash back to the time they slept together.
Yeah, it's really
and
weird.
And someone stole the wheels off the car.
Yeah, they were in the back fooling around, and like, what was that? And he's like, it's nothing. Come back under the blanket. And then four people just run away with the tires.
And he's like, hey, like, they won't say the word condom, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, that was interesting. That had to be from the studio, right? Like, oh, it has no to. Way it wasn't.
He said,
yeah.
You know, the thing I put on me, well, it broke. And I was like, that is. Although, I guess that is kind of the way high schoolers talked about condoms. Like, no one wanted to say the word condom.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I'm, like, having flashbacks to, like, that, like, talking about sex in high school. It's like, no one wanted to say the word condom. Everyone was a little embarrassed about it.
So, that class ends, and Booger and he have a quick chat where he's like, hey, you know, you gotta play the saxophone more because, you know, girls love guys who play instruments. And then he's like, no, Ski K-12 and girls will get sterile just looking at you. How is that a desirable thing? What?
Yeah, I don't know why sterile was where you went with. But I also then started like hearing in my head guys playing Wonderwall on the saxophone.
Like imagining a world where the bass instrument was the saxophone instead.
Yeah, it was like every guy in college has a saxophone in the corner.
Oh my! That would have been that would have fit so well into the world of this movie.
It would have. Also, that would have made dorms even worse.
Oh my god! I would have murdered everybody. There would be so many saxophones thrown out so many windows.
I'm practicing. Smash! Smash! That scene in Animal House. Brilliant.
Yeah. I would have taken a flamethrower to them, just permanently disfigured them. no saxophone. But I'll tell you, as someone who had a college freshman year roommate who had a full-size keyboard that he played without headphones, that's just as bad as any instrument you can imagine, especially when it's playing weirdy, spacey nonsense jams.
Yeah, he basically was playing the theremin, but not cool at all.
Yeah, yeah. This is the point where the teacher asks Lane if he can take out Beth.
Yeah, and I was like, what? And so is he having a mental breakdown or something?
And this is the grossest scene to the movie that followed. Why, did you have another point there?
Well, my thought was I was like, oh, maybe all of this is his like suffocation dream. Like he's like oxygen starved brain having a fever dream.
That would be really depressing.
I don't know what this movie didn't make any sense.
Like if they cut back to Lane and the end of the movie was the whole thing was a death dream?
No, he came back to life. Like I'm saying like they like gave him mouth to mouth or shocked him or whatever and he was back. But like the movie was just him like his like oxygen starved brain. That's why nothing made sense.
I mean, that would work, but that would also be a very strange way to end a movie.
No, because then I was picturing, because it was in the garage, so I was picturing, like, the mom was there, and the dad was there, and the foreign exchange student, like, was walking across the street, like, what's wrong?
Oh. Yeah, that's a very different movie. You've made this movie very interesting in your head canon.
Way better.
I don't know about better, but way different. So then we get, at lunch, the portly kid, Ricky, is eating Jell-O with a straw, and I almost threw up.
You and I are like the only people I know who actively hate Jell-O.
I think it's just the two of us, which is a good thing that we lived in the same house, so there was never any Jell-O to contend with.
Because every time we're at a bar and there's like the boys in their underwear with a tray of Jell-O shots, like Jell-O shots for a dollar, all my friends do it. I'm like, no, thank you. And they're like, why not? It's a dollar. And I was like, I hate Jell-O. Like, it makes me wretch.
People force it on me all the time. They're like, I made Jell-O shots. I'm like, I really don't like Jell-O. And they're like, oh, come on. And then I like force myself to do it and I dry heave.
Like, yeah, I do one. I do like one a year and I'm like,
yeah. Wah, wah. I'm at like a, I mean, I'm older than you, so it's like once every couple years. But yeah, it's literally me like powering through a Jell-O and then chugging my beer because I'm just like, oh God, no. Don't throw up.
Yeah.
I'm like,
I have the vodka soda in a death grip. So it's just like,
I take it like a pill. I bite it in half and I swallow it twice. Like it's a pill. Like I'm taking medicine and I'm just like, glug, glug.
And I tell people that and they're always like, what do you mean you don't like Jell-O? And I'm like, it's disgusting.
Yeah, I don't understand the appeal of it. It's a deeply unsatisfying. No real food has that texture. None. No. No real food.
People are like, you slurp it up. I'm like, that is gross.
Yeah, I like to eat my food or drink my drink, but I don't. Never the twain shall meet.
Yeah, and this is a soup, and Jell-O a soup is not.
Yeah. Plus, yeah. Oh, everything about it is terrible. But then Booger one-ups him by snorting the Jell-O, and that was the point when I had to take like a little break from watching this movie, because the noise of Jell-O being slurped through a straw was deeply, deeply upsetting to me.
Like, that to me is something you could play to torture me.
Absolutely. It's that's me in the Clockwork Orange thing where they have my eyes held open. It's just this scene, that 10 seconds on repeat, and me throwing up
so
all over the place.
Your hell is watching a shitty Vine, essentially.
Yes, exactly. That's my room whatever from
Room 101.
Yeah, I think room 101 from...
it was because I had English class in room 202.
Oh, okay. Yeah, from 1984. That's just, I have to keep watching that with like really good headphones on, so the noises are like right there in my head.
Did I tell you, like, I wrote it. We had in room. I just remember, it was reminded of me writing a paper. We had to write our personal room 101, like what it would be for us.
Yeah, and that's a pretty common assignment.
And I wrote it, and the friggin' theme reader was like, "I don't understand why this is a fear." And like B. And I was like, "Are you kidding me? You don't get to tell me it's not a fear, you bitch."
Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, I was like, they were like, I was in a chair strapped down and I couldn't speak, but I had to watch myself fail on stage for an entire show while like there were critics all around me.
Oh, okay.
It was like, I had to like hear everyone be like, oh my God, he's terrible. Like, isn't he bad? Like, oh my God, these I'm going to write a bad review, blah, blah, blah. And like, I couldn't do anything about it. I was like, that's terrifying to me. And she was she was like, I don't get it. And I was like, what the hell?
That's weird. So we get a very interesting scene right after this where he starts having a fight with a drawing that he's making of Lane and her like new boyfriend as a monster.
Yeah.
And so he like literally starts yelling at this picture that he's drawn, and there's like a record scratch moment where everyone's like, what is he doing? And he's just like screaming at his crumpled up ball of paper. And then it's
because
like,
I couldn't tell if he said Lane, you will love me again, or just you will love me again, or not Lane. Beth.
I think he just says, you will love me again.
Okay. That is something you can come back from.
But, I mean, everybody knows he's talking about Beth. It's not like it's a big secret.
At least in his head.
Well, the other thing, too, is, like, in terms of high school caste system, Lane is definitely dating above his station.
See, I couldn't tell where he was supposed to fit, because he's not, like, a super nerd, and he's not unattractive.
No, but I think he's in, like, the weirdo circle.
Gotcha.
Because he's kind of like arty and draws and stuff like that.
But he also skis. So I was so confused.
But he doesn't make the team.
Oh, right. They won't let him on the team.
Yeah. Well, that is true. In the beginning, they do kind of imply that the douchey McDoucherson guy cheats to get him off the team. Like, he doesn't click the stopwatch for a little bit to make sure he doesn't qualify.
Yeah.
We didn't mention that before. But the reason he's screaming, fighting with a drawing is because he thinks he can ask out this girl who is dating the basketball team, as in all five of them simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite detail of this, and I don't know if you caught it, the basketball players are all eating baby food with spoons.
I didn't catch that. That's
weird.
They're
all eating baby food out of jars because they're like, you know, Neanderthal idiots in
the
movie.
That's so weird.
Yeah, and it's one of those like little details of this that I'm like, oh man, I'm really in love with this. This is probably, I'm not exaggerating, the most I've enjoyed watching a movie for the podcast in 6 months plus.
Oh, I would put money on that. 6 months?
Yeah.
I have to look at our catalog and find the...
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of fun with a lot. Like, I really love, in retrospect, you know, Amityville Part 4 because it was fun to make fun of. But this movie, I just like really genuinely have affection for.
Yeah, like me with Death Becomes Her.
Yeah. So
and when we eventually do Heathers.
So he tries to pick up this girl who's with the basketball team by like mimicking her love for rollerblading or roller skating rather, and he can like barely stand up on them. And it concludes with a gag where he accidentally yanks her clothes off, and then smash cuts to the five basketball players like looming over him like murder.
I was like, was it a one-piece cheerleading outfit?
It was a tearaway outfit. It came off like the basketball warm-up
yeah,
pants,
it was. It was. Yeah, it was for burlesque. It was a one-piece burlesque cheerleading outfit.
So there's this wrestler guy who apparently comes out wearing like a suit and tears it off like James Bond style. I saw it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has on a nice suit. He's like a pretty good-looking dude, and he just like tears off the top and then he tears away the pants. And I saw this great gif where like the pants just didn't cooperate, and so he like tore off one leg and then he had to like do like four attempts to get the other leg clear. And he's in a tag team, so his partner is like awkwardly standing there like trying to strike their pose, and he's just busy trying to rip his pants off. It was pretty magical.
As someone who is friends with a bunch of burlesquers, I've seen that happen more than I can count on stage.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. It's got to be a pretty common problem for live performance where you have to do that. But it's just really funny watching, like, you know, millions of people around the world watching a man trying to take off his pants in front of each other.
I think it's just called porn.
Yeah, well, yes, but presumably they're a little more successful in the porn realm, one would think. So he's all beaten up and he goes to his car, and the ghost, subway ghost teacher drives by with Beth in the front seat and like gives him a little finger wave.
So weird.
So this drives him to his second thoughts about suicide, and he's sitting on a bridge, and Booger comes up to him and he's like, "Hey buddy, don't worry about it. I got your back. We're going to all be okay here." And he's on a bicycle and he slaps him in the back and bikes away, and Cusack falls off the bridge but is saved at the last minute by a garbage truck.
And the garbage truck drives past these utility guys that are all black, and they look down and they're like, "They threw away a perfectly good white boy." And I was like, this is really weird.
It's like the best line of the movie, I think. It's a real shame weird. When they throw away a perfectly good white boy. So he's at the top of K-12 with Booger. Trying to figure out. Here's another thing I thought of while watching this, and this might be putting too much onto this movie, because I think they're not seniors in high school, right? They're juniors?
No, they're not seniors, so it's sophomore or junior.
Okay. Because the mountain being named K-12 might be in reference to mountains. But
I was going to say, K-12 just sounds like you're the American schooling system.
Yeah, and I thought that was like perhaps an interesting analogy for like conquering school, which
I maybe I didn't even think about that. That's a good one.
So K2 is definitely a big mountain. I don't know if it has another name, but I know it is a big mountain. So I'm guessing this was supposed to be a reference to that because it's, you know, a big mountain.
Probably.
But Booger is snorting snow. There's a running gag where he like talks about he can't get real drugs there as he's like buying whipped cream in the store at one point. So he snorts the snow and he's like, "This is pure snow." And then he can't feel his hand.
Yeah. He's doing whippets, which are a real drug.
Yes. Yes, they are. And Lane goes skiing down K-12 for the first time, and he makes it approximately 6 feet before he falls.
Yeah.
And
looks like he would have shattered everything.
Oh yeah. This is definitely a broken pelvis situation. He like rolls and hops up in the air a little bit and lands and rolls and lands and rolls. He looks like he'd be real, real messed up. So it's Christmas time, which I didn't realize was a thing in this movie. I forgot about.
Yeah, all of a sudden Christmas happened, and
yes. So they come home to the television is in the fireplace and showing the Yule log channel, and he's unwrapping gifts with his parents, and his mom has purchased him a bunch of frozen TV dinners,
and she's dressed like a reindeer.
Yes, this is a real thing that happened to the director, but it was his birthday.
What?
His mom gave him frozen dinners for his birthday.
Why?
I think that's the worst present in the history of gifting.
It's up there. It's certainly up there.
Yeah. Even if it was like my favorite frozen dinner, that is objectively a bad gift.
Although now that I talk about it, now that I keep saying frozen dinner, I keep being like, you know what? I want to try kid cuisine and see how that holds up.
Oh, God. It's going to be that mushy fake chicken.
No. It depends on what I get. Like, I don't know if I get the chicken nuggets. They were other kid cuisines. I think. Well,
they would all be garbage, bad, terrible food.
Most likely.
Have you had like a Hungry Man dinner? They're terrible.
No, but I did have it's an Italian sounding name, and they're like a dollar at Walmart.
Oh yeah, those are real bad too.
I had a bunch of those in the college program in Disney World.
Yeah, that's a sad dinner for one, is what that is.
Yep, that's exactly what that is.
So we hang out with Ricky a little bit more to establish some stuff with Monique because, you know, eventually she's going to be a big part of this movie.
Yeah, we got
to
know who she is.
Yeah. And I noticed here that, like, Ricky's house is very similar to John Waters' stuff to me, especially with his mom and her.
Yeah, she was very Hairspray.
Yeah, yeah. And like kind of weird decorations and kind of a strange place, which, you know, I would imagine, I don't know him, but I'd imagine John Waters would like this movie. It seems like something that would be up his alley.
I have a feeling John Waters has watched this movie more than once.
Yeah, yeah. While filling
in his mustache.
I don't know the guy. I live in the city. I've met him a couple times. I've seen him in the city, you know, living where he lives. But I don't know for a fact, but I'd be surprised to find out he didn't like this movie. I'll ask him if I ever see him, and I'll report back on the podcast. That'll be the weirdest thing that's ever been asked of him on the street, I think.
Will it, though?
I mean,
it's John Waters.
That's true. That's true.
I think the weird ship has sailed.
That is true. So Monique gets a framed picture of Ricky for Christmas, and then Lane's dad gets this amazing aardvark outfit made out of aardvark fur.
It's so weird.
And the hood is like an aardvark head, and the mom is like, you know, this is going to be the hot item this summer or this winter. And I love that when they go outside to show off the new garage door that he got the mom as a gift, which, hey, dad, bad gift, just FYI.
Well, mom also bad gift, so.
True, true. But the neighbor is wearing the same aardvark outfit.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
And then Cusack is in the garage trying to kill himself. He's got the door shut and the car running. And then he puts it into reverse by mistake and blows right out through the brand new garage door, splintering it into pieces.
Just in time for a French exchange girl to see him.
Yeah, and this is like they finally see each other. So there's a little fun gag with the mailman who's opening people's mail. And he like knocks on the door and Lane's brother comes to the door. And he's like, hey, you got a copy of the book, How to Pick Up Sleazy Women or Trashy Women, excuse me. And then he hands, like, the kid leaves and he knocks on the door again and it's Lane. He's like, hey, your subscription to whatever came
your subscription to Sad Boys Monthly.
How to Kill Yourself Quarterly is here. And I just love this character of, like, opening people's mail and being weird about it. He literally only pops up in this one scene, but it's a fun little goofy thing. And then he goes, apparently his dad has set up a date for him with this girl, Joanne, who's wearing, like, headgear. And she comes out and whips out a calculator and is like, okay, if we went out to dinner, and she starts like running up a tally and like we'd have dessert, we'd have a, you know, this and this and this, tax and tip. Okay, my half would be $13.67. How about you just give me that and we'll call it a day? And he like whips out a checkbook and starts writing a check to her.
I like the 80s prices where she was like, dinner's $10 a person. And I was like, what?
You could barely go to like Burger King for $10 a person now.
I was like, what is it, like half an app?
Yeah, man, that's better prices for Dayton, that's for damn sure.
I'll get three French fries and the crust from a crusted brie.
Just the crust that some other customer didn't want. That's cheaper, yeah. Right?
And I appreciate that he's like, because I was like, I guess he's supposed to be kind of a dorky character, but I appreciate that he's confident with the women.
Yeah, he just like goes to pick this girl up and is just like, yeah, like let's go. I'll go on this date with you, whatever.
You're the lucky one, lady.
Yeah, yeah. So we go to a high school dance and we get the theme song for the movie.
We get E.G. Daily playing Jem. Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, she is so playing Jem.
It's basically she looks like Jem. She got the big old hair.
Yeah,
the teeny
yeah, yeah.
tiny skirt with the poofy sleeve.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great 80s dress. It is quintessential 80s dress.
Oh, it's primo.
And she's singing Better Off Dead, the song.
Mm-hmm. Because this movie is called that for some reason.
Yeah, because he says it like three times, I'd be better off dead.
Yeah, I know, but I don't get why that is what that's what they chose to be like.
Because he keeps trying to kill himself?
I know, but it doesn't, like, that doesn't make sense.
But it's about him learning that he's not better off dead.
Never mind.
Okay. So we find out that Ricky can dance, despite being a disgusting blob, and then he just, like, faints, I guess? I don't really understand what happens after the dance sequence, but he just, like, falls down the floor and someone covers him with his own jacket, and they just go back to dancing around his lifeless body.
I mean, that's what you gotta do in the apocalypse, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You gotta find somewhere to dance. Here's where Monique and Lane meet. They have a nice little meet-cute, and he kind of, like, saves her from having to deal with Ricky. And you know, Ricky's like, you know, mom's going to be here to pick us up. She said we have to be there waiting for her. Because Ricky's very afraid of his mother in this. And Cusack kind of like brushes him off and he's like, get out of here. I'm talking to Monique. Like, come on, get out of here.
I thought, I'm surprised Cusack wasn't like, why don't I take her home? Because I live across the street
that
from you.
Yeah, that would have been really logical. But for some reason, he doesn't make that move. Mostly so we can set up the part where we see the $2 kid who's like multiplied and it's like, perfect. It looks like something out of Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween or what have you. Like it's
what's,
all
or
foggy.
What's the is it the tall? What's the movie with the tall man?
Oh, Phantasm.
Yes.
Yeah, it does look like that. It's all foggy and weird, and the kids are chasing him, like yelling $2, and he comes bursting into the house, and his dad is reading a book of like, is your kid doing drugs? And he's like, Dad, they're after me, and goes thumping up the stairs, and the dad just like highlights the word psychosis.
And then mom's cooking an octopus. It's fighting back with a claw.
Yes, it's amazing. It's so awesome. They're like 3-foot-long octopus tentacle puppet arms.
At least five of them.
Yeah, like waving out of the pot. And my favorite is she has one that's been cut off, and she puts the cut-off one in the pot, and then that one starts moving too.
It was so great because no one ever. Everyone was so unfazed by the live octopus.
She keeps trying to put the lid on the pot, like over the snapping claw and the waving arms, and nobody is even paying attention to the fact that she's fighting dinner, like literally fighting dinner.
It was great.
So his dad gets him a job at the pig themed burger joint, which is just like really not good branding.
I think it's called Pig in a Burger.
I think it's just called Pig Burger. Like, I think it's supposed to be, like, Pig Out. Oh. But in any case, it's weird.
Yeah.
And then we get, like, perhaps the most famous sequence of the whole movie where he kind of shows him how to make burgers, and it turns into this, like, amazing dream sequence where he's playing Dr. Frankenstein, and he like, puts the burger on a little gurney and, like, you know, cranks it up to the sky during a lightning storm, and then the burger is claymated with eyes and is, like, dancing and singing. Everybody wants some, which is the theme of the burger restaurant.
Yeah, it was interesting.
You didn't like it? I love that little burger sequence.
I think it's cute, but again, I want to rewatch this movie with the lens of like,
okay,
going into it knowing where it is, as opposed to like having realized this is where it is 20 minutes ago and like still kind of catching up to that.
Right, right. This is one of the sequences I remembered from the many viewings of this on Comedy Central.
That makes sense. It is a memorable sequence.
Yeah. And also I love that like he has to wear this pig chef's hat with eyes on it and a snout, but the snout definitely looks like testicles.
Yep.
And it's dangling right in his face, and I just like everything about the absurdism of this is wonderful.
Super duper does.
So he fails on the mountain again, and he comes back down and is going to set himself on fire wearing his bedspread
bed
as a poncho.
Yeah,
his bed sheets as a poncho. And he picks up the primer from the garage, and then they're like, oh, no, Lane, come have dinner. We have the Ricky family over, because I don't remember their last name. And it's Ricky and the exchange student and the mom. And the mom is just like never shuts the hell up, talking and smoking. And he pours the primer into a bowl and starts dousing himself with it. And she refills her glass with it and just like chugs a glass of primer.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes just like the moonshine I used to drink at my uncle's farm.
And I'm pretty sure his mom knows French.
Really?
Yeah, because she says she asks where the toilet is. And then the mom's like, I think she means where's the toilet.
Well, toilet in French sounds like the word toilet.
Yeah, but like it was a weird moment of clarity for her. Like the mom doesn't understand shit in this movie.
That is true. Although I think it just is that, you know, isn't it toilet? Yeah, toilet. Okay. And then the Ricky's mom lights up a cigarette while Cusack like desperately tries to stop her, and it smash cuts to the house exploding.
And then it's the exchange student, John Cusack, and Ricky in the car, and he's like, sorry about your mom. And I was like, did they just kill his mother?
I know. I was so thinking that was what it was going to be. But he's like, apparently the doctor said she's going to be fine. There's also a great bit in that scene where the mom is like overpronouncing the cuisine. The meal she's lined up is French fries and French bread and French dressing. complete with Peru water, which is Perrier.
Yeah,
but my favorite bit is the one, because I have done this myself and like caught it, and I try not to do it anymore. But when you're speaking to someone who doesn't understand English,
somehow people feel like if you yell at them, they will understand the word. Like the, as if the barrier was the volume and not the language. They're like,
yeah.
How are you liking America? No, how are you like? And as if like that's going to solve the problem.
Yep, that's it. Thank you. I understand now.
Like, oh, what I needed to be was yelled at. I apologize. So they get into another race with the fake Howard Cosell guys while Ricky and Monique are in the car. And they finally have a race, which is nice. They have a nice little sequence where they almost kill some nuns.
All of a sudden his car can drive normally now.
Yeah. And then he gets launched into like a small body of water that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Nope. And he and Monique have a laugh about it while Ricky is a wet blanket about it.
Yeah, of course. And then they drive to school afterwards with the car covered in mud and like leaking water. And when they open the back seat, a duck gets out.
I liked it a lot.
It was like Hot Fuzz.
Oh, it was.
With the swan. Yeah, yeah. Other guys who I bet like this movie.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
And I think the lunchroom scene that sets up the rest of the movie, that gives us our ticking clock where Lane gets into a confrontation with the bully and is like, I'll take you on any place, anytime, anywhere. You know, you just name, just me and you. That's all we need to do. We'll settle the score. And then it immediately, like as soon as he accepts his challenge, it immediately is announced on the loudspeaker and the whole room erupts in cheers. It's like, that's the point where I was like, this might now be my favorite movie about what high school is like, because like, it's that perfect encapsulation of everything feels more important than it is dumb little fight.
Also, what is High Noon and where did that come from?
Western movies, I'm guessing.
Is that it? Is that the whole sentence?
I'm probably misremembering this, but I feel like I recall reading that most Western duels did not happen at High Noon. They would have happened earlier in the day. But I think the point of it for High Noon in movies, it comes from movies because it's like really dramatic looking with the sun in the middle of the sky and like, you know, it's hanging over the head of one of the guys. Like, that's just a cool looking shot.
Yeah.
And it would be, you know, equally cool with a moon, but you couldn't do High Moon.
I like High Moon.
But it wouldn't, like, that wouldn't have worked in the early days of film. So I think it's truly that. Like, I think it's a film thing entirely and not real.
Gotcha. It also felt like this scene was supposed to happen, like, 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing, though. This movie's only, like, an hour and 35 minutes. It's not overly long to me.
It feels like it almost feels like two different movies. Like, the whole trope of the, like, oh, we'll have to have a ski competition to get the girl back and, like, get me on the right team and all that, like, didn't feel necessary.
Yeah.
It felt like there was a movie about John Cusack trying to win a girl back through a ski competition, and it felt like there was a movie about the absurdity of high school starring John Cusack, and they just blended together.
I think you're totally right. I also think you can't make the weirdo movie without, like, some level of plot to hang it on.
Oh, I agree, but I don't think in the 11th hour busting out the ski competition was the way to go.
Yeah, although they did set it up pretty early in the movie that, like, you knew it was going to end on the mountain, even though
it takes
a while to get there.
But, like, yeah. The fact that it took so long to, like, literally get there was annoying to me.
No, I think that's a perfectly fair point in criticism. I'm not arguing that point. I think it's fair, but yeah, I don't know. I think you can't do the absurdism without, like, this really I think if the plot was any different, it has to be tropey and cliche so that you can, like, kind of point at that cliche and talk about how weird it is.
Fair enough.
So he goes to get his skis fixed at the ski place, and there's this guy with, like, two broken arms and two broken legs. And he's like, what'd you do? Oh, I tried to ski K-12.
Mm-hmm. No one should ski that. Anyways, what are you doing?
I'm just going to ski K-12. Don't worry about it. It's fine. And then the $2 kid gets taken through the car wash on top of the car. That's fun.
He pops out of nowhere. I hate him.
Yeah, you're right. Because, like, at the point where we get this ticking clock, we're, like, just about an hour into the movie. And in the last half hour of the movie, he and Lane fall in love and we have the ski competition.
And he has to learn to ski.
Yes, and he learns how to ski. Although he learns how to ski in a single one-day montage.
He does.
So Monique reveals her secret that she can actually speak English, and then the next morning...
Which, like, duh. Like, they're not going to send a foreign exchange student to America, and they can't speak a lick of English.
Someone even comments on that earlier in the movie, and she just, like, smiles and nods like she's confused. Which I get. She's like, you know, I got to keep this guy from trying to molest me all the time, so I figured if I just didn't speak to him ever, he'd leave me alone. It hasn't worked so far. But he comes out in the morning and she is underneath his car fixing it. And that leads to a classic, which we haven't had in a while, but a classic fixing stuff up montage.
It was the first montage of the movie.
Yeah, it does take a while to get there, but we get a bunch to end the movie.
Yeah.
But we haven't had a good fixing stuff up montage in a long while.
Oh, we haven't.
It's also a absolutely beautiful Camaro that they fix up.
Oh, it's great looking. And yeah. I'm not even a car guy. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. So they roll up to the Howard Cosell car where they're having a double date with two Asian women, and they go to race them and totally leave them in the dust, and then the women just, like, leave the car.
Oh, it was great. And they were, like, so mad.
So he and Monique fall in love over the course of, like, 2 days fixing
it. It feels really late for falling in love. Like,
it does.
They just met, like, 10 minutes ago.
It's true. It's true. They did.
Like, they should have met in the beginning of the film. Like, it felt like it wanted to cover everything in, like, the teen movies of the 80s, but it also wanted to be subversive about them. And I think it put too many tropes in there to be properly subversive without feeling rushed and forced over some of them.
Okay. I think if there was a couple small edits made, like, I think if you move the dinner scene with Lane meeting Monique to, like, the first 40 minutes of the movie, and then backed up the he learns she can speak English to, like, the hour-ish mark, and then they fix the car up at, like, an hour and 15, it probably wildly changes how you feel about that, but I think it's a fair criticism. He sets her up for a romantic dinner at the Pig Burger, where he plays the saxophone for her and then reveals the dinner is a frozen dinner. For Christmas.
And he pops champagne. Where do you get champagne?
Yeah, I don't know how the kids have very easy access to alcohol, because earlier in the movie, Booger is just, like, casually drinking a Budweiser despite saying
he can't get
real drugs. So I don't know where that came from, but it is very easy to get alcohol as a 17-year-old in whatever town this is. So Monique, he was like, oh, no, I need to learn how to ski. So Monique takes him up there and gives him word for word the same pep talk that Booger gave him earlier, which is, like, go straight. If you see something, turn. Don't hit it.
Which, like, solid, you know, advice.
Yeah, no, that's the basic tenets of how to ski. But he falls again, and then he has, like, a sweet polar bear Superman slide down the mountain on his belly.
Mm-hmm. And then they end up skiing real good.
Oh, yeah, they have a...
It was like a BMX bandit scene.
Yeah, they're holding hands and, like, circling and spinning. And by the way, these are definitely not John Cusack and the actress
who
plays
Monique. I wish it was them, like, but it's super not.
John Cusack's stunt double is, like, 6'6 and 300 pounds. Like, it is very... It's not really. But it's, like, very obviously not Cusack. The build is totally different. And then my favorite is they, like, start playing leapfrog, where, like, one of them puts their legs wide and the other one squats down and slides under him, which feels, like, super dangerous to me.
Yeah, but so is a lot of, like, fun, tricky stuff people do.
That's true. That's true. But we set up earlier that he doesn't really know what he's doing, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah, but also it's a movie, and now he does, magically.
That's true. And it's also all to set up the end where, you know, they kind of fall down and they're about to kiss, and Booger comes by and skis over his ski and breaks the binding and is like, oh, you got to get up to the top of the mountain. It's almost time for the big competition.
Everyone in town is here.
Apparently this ski lesson took place from 8 a.m. to 11:59 a.m. on the day of the competition.
That seems like the solid time to learn to ski.
4 hours before, let's get up there and give it a shot. So the $2 kid shows up and has rigged his bike up to work with skis.
Like, what? That's like some video game bullshit.
I feel like it might also be in that James Bond movie we did. There was a lot of weird ski nonsense in that.
Oh, probably. I forgot that started with it, that opened with, like, a badass ski chase.
Yeah, yeah. Skiing was big in the 80s, man. It was the height of the hype.
Apparently.
So the $2 kid chases him up the mountain, and Lane is like, F it, I'm going to go. And he's skiing on one ski, and the whole crowd goes, like, super bananas about it.
Because the rich kid is like, oh, he's not showing up. I better just set a new record anyways. And then Lane pops up next to him. Yeah. And he's like, hey, got to go. Bye.
Also, one of his lackeys is, like, tenderly rubbing his inner thighs. Did you notice that?
Wait, rubbing whose inner? His own or the rich kid's?
No, the rich kid's. He's, like, standing there on his skis, and the one lackey is, like, standing there with a walkie-talkie communicating with the bottom, and the other lackey is, like, giving him a rub down, but he's, like, rubbing up the inside of his legs and stuff. It's very, very homoerotic.
Not shocking for the 80s, but that's weird.
Yeah, yeah. So the race is on, and Lane is like zip-zapping all over this place on one ski. Again, very obvious stunt double for John Cusack, is doing moguls with one foot.
Yeah.
So he wins, and of course his ex wants him back, but
Monique is here now.
His true love has been Monique, so he doesn't need this dum-dum. Even though Monique is going to leave in like a couple of weeks.
Yeah, she's been here a while at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And Cosell shows up and does like a post-game interview, which I really like. Like that felt like a great way to end that gag to me, that he runs up and is like, asking a post-game question. And then there's like, you think the movie's over, but there's like this one final like women are property bit where Monique's got to be fought for by Lane and Ricky with ski poles.
Yep. I would have much rather this movie ended with like Beth trying to kiss him and he's like, nope. And then he kisses her. And then Howard Cosell shows up and is like, how did you make this victory?
Yeah, yeah. And then the final answer is like, language lessons. And he's like, well, you heard it here. Language
Better
lessons.
Off dead.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Now. Credits. Yeah, I don't need the fight with Ricky. It's really weird. Especially because, like, for some reason, they feel like Ricky needs, like, a redeeming aunt thing to happen to him. So, like, a weird girl comes up to Ricky and, like, gives him...
That we've never seen before.
No, but...
I thought she was going to be Headgear Girl.
Yeah, but no, it's a different headgear girl who's, like, a little bit on the heavy side, and it's like, wait, what? You're just, like, putting the two heavy actors together? That's kind of fucking shitty. This has been, like, a really, like, surprisingly not-bad-to-anybody movie until this last 2 minutes of, like, hey, why does he deserve a happy ending? He's been a dick the whole movie. But the final thing of this movie is the credits are rolling, and they're rolling over the image of the house, which they're looking at the garage door again, and then there starts to be a rumbling noise, and the kid earlier in the movie had gotten, like, a make-your-own rocket kit, make-your-own, like, not toy rocket, but, like, NASA rocket, and apparently has built it in the house because it's taking off and setting the house on fire.
Yeah, I forgot they planted that seed earlier.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's the entirety of Better Off Dead. Do you have any final thoughts?
It's solid. I found it on Netflix, so it is readily available for free.
You found it on Netflix?
Not Netflix. I'm sorry, YouTube.
Yeah.
I just YouTube Better Off Dead and it popped up.
Yeah, it's up there a bunch of different times, and people have uploaded a bunch, unfortunately, which sucks for Savage Steve Holland and crew.
Yes. But it's readily available. It's... the level of enjoyment and the ease of access is definitely a recommend for me.
Yeah, I really, really like this. I like this even more than I remembered liking it before. Highly, highly recommend. I really, really love this movie in a way that I haven't loved anything on this podcast in a long, long time. If you haven't seen this before, definitely check it out. And check it out knowing it's going to be kind of weird and crazy absurdist, because that's really helpful for
it is super helpful.
Yeah. No need for you to make up a theme song, because we have an excellent one in this movie. I think that about wraps it up for Better Off Dead. Before we let you go, a couple quick housekeeping notes. So we are currently in a competition with the website Monkeys Fighting Robots. We are in the Amateur Podcast Championships for 2016. If you go to dissectingthe80s.com/vote, you can vote for our show. We would really appreciate your support. You could also share that link or tweet it or Facebook it or whatever and help us spread the word. I'm going to be really honest with you guys. There's other shows with bigger followings than us, so an audience vote is going to be tough for us without a lot of you getting behind us. We would really appreciate it if you would take the time to do it. You do have to enter an email, but they don't verify it. So do with that what you will. Don't forget to check us out at dissectingthe80s.com for everything you want to know about the show, plus the charity promotion we're running right now for our live episodes. Facebook.com/dissectingthe80s. We're Dissecting the 80s on Instagram and on Twitter. It's slightly different for character count. It's Dissectomania. I'm on there a ton, so if you ever want to hit us up on Twitter. Or you can call 856-DISSECT. And don't forget, you can get those Ghostbusters cards by emailing or calling us and letting us know what your favorite episode is. Why don't you tell the people what our next thing is?
Next week is the start of...
February!
Starting with Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Which is not the gay one. No, there's a gay one.
There is. We're doing all the classic 80s slashers for Forbuary. We thought about doing this as a spooktacular thing. We kind of did it with the 3D. But I think this is the only way we could do all three of them together in 1 month. So we can talk about some classic 80s slashers.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I have been Trip Lano.
And I will always be Andrew Lano.
Until next time.
Don't you forget about me.
Dissecting the 80s is a Chum Some of This production.
Things we're going to cut out in editing.
It's 856 Dissect. That's right. 856. Nope. Oh, I know, but it sounded like a demon was erupting from you. It really freaked me out.
Sorry. No, I'm fine.
It was like...
I'm fine.
Oh, God. No.
I touched the lamp.
Oh, no. Hold on.
Why are you moving so hugging so slow?
All right. Can you see my mouth now? Is this better?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
One, two, three, four, Buary. I think there's also a lag in audio, so I think...
Oh, okay. Like, maybe go off my finger. Go off my finger. See if that helps.
One.
No, that's not it.
One, two, three, four, Buary.
I think we got it. All right, go from there.